Welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Thursday, June 29th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me today. Got some major news for you. Also, an interview coming up with the author of a new book called The Real RFK Jr. This author, his name is Dick Russell. An amazing interview because he also did a book years ago and researched the assassination of JFK. And so we talk about JFK's assassination, Senator Robert Kennedy's assassination. That would be RFK Jr.'s father. And then also about RFK Jr. himself and his rise to the current effort at winning the Democrat nomination for president and what kind of a person RFK Jr. is and what he would do if he were elected to the office of the presidency. I mean, this is a really fascinating interview. In fact, I invited this author, Dick Russell, I invited him back to do another episode just about JFK's assassination. So, and one of the things that he and I both agree on is that the United States of America has existed under a deep state CIA coup since 1963. So here we are, 60 years of essentially being enemy occupied by a criminal cartel of deep state agents that kill presidents. They started with JFK. They arranged for Reagan to be shot as well. And they tried to destroy Trump with Russia, Russia, Russia. And now they're going to rig the election in 2024. So fascinating interview. That's coming up later today. All right. In addition, we have some pretty shocking news right now about a malaria alert that has been issued in Florida. Just in time for the Bill Gates malaria vaccine and all the GMO breeding and all the releases of GMO in places like Florida. Why do we have a malaria mosquito problem suddenly in Florida? Well, we'll get into that. Of course, it's weaponized malaria, right? This is another bioweapon. We'll talk about that in today's episode as well. We have another shocking example of trans fascism that has reared its ugly, ugly head. And this is due to 250 woke Hollywood libtards who have signed a letter and issued it to the tech companies demanding censorship of anyone who opposes the mutilation of children for trans surgery. So we'll get into that. And then also some news about the remains of the Ocean Gate carbon fiber submarine that imploded. The submarine remains have been retrieved and what are called presumably human remains, but they're not sure. That's what happens to you when ocean water implodes all over your body at 5,500 pounds per square inch and you get turned into mush where even bones don't exist any longer. So they're kind of sort of thinking it might be human remains, but they're not really sure. So yeah, those stories and more coming up here today. Where do we even begin? Let's see. Let me begin with a couple of programming notes. So first of all, over the years, our commenting system on Brighteon.com has received numerous complaints because it is a third-party hosted comment system, and that third-party host has engaged in various forms of routine censorship and automatic silencing of certain user accounts because those accounts were complained about on various platforms and so on. It's been a bit of a nightmare. We've been accused of censorship falsely because this third-party comment provider was actually doing the censorship. So over the last year plus, I don't know how long it's been, we have built our own commenting system. And we're rolling it out. Like I said before, we have a lot of cool projects and surprises for you. This is one of them. So we're rolling out a new comment system across Brighteon.com. And what's interesting is that this comment system is going to become the universal comment system across all our platforms, and you'll be able to use the same user account to also post comments on Natural News or News Target or Brighteon.com or Brighteon Social. We're going to have a single sign-on universal system, and this is the first step. So the commenting system that we had used before was called Discuss, which maybe it should be called Disgust. I don't know. But D-I-S-Q-U-S, Disgust. Now, here's the catch in all of this, and I'm just the messenger. Don't send me any hate because of this. It's not our fault. The only way to move to a new commenting system is to ditch the old commenting system. And there's no way for us to export all the comments from the old system and bring them over to the new system. So effectively, in order to eliminate the censorship of Discuss, we have to start over with a new censorship-free comment system, which means that all the old comments under Discuss will vanish because we won't use that system anymore. But the good news is then from this point forward, we have our own commenting system. We have the database. We won't be censoring people unless they, you know, do crazy, insane, illegal things like calling for death or whatever. But you get my point. So if you've ever been banned from the comment system on Brighteon.com, check out the new system as it rolls out today and tomorrow. I'm sure we'll have bugs. We'll have little glitches here and there. So you could also wait a few days and try it next week. But this is our attempt to actually protect and embrace free speech and not rely on third-party providers for commenting systems. So thank you for your understanding on this. We're doing the best we can to support free speech in every way possible. Okay, here's something else cool. I was also told by one of our listeners and fans that, you know how yesterday I was talking about chlorine dioxide and how you can stockpile raw materials to make your own chlorine dioxide for emergency use. You know, it makes an incredible sanitizer. It's incredibly important as an off-grid item, first aid, emergency medicine, sanitizing, water collection barrels. I use it for chickens and dogs and all kinds of things, right? Well, a fan said, hey, you should share with people that the website called theuniversalantidote.com offers a free download. I think it's a PDF or a book or something. And in that download, apparently in lessons 5 and 6, it gives you all the instructions for making your own chlorine dioxide using raw ingredients, which is sodium chlorite combined with some other acid, which can be like citric acid or hydrochloric acid or phosphoric acid or even vinegar, which is acetic acid, by the way. And then also in that guide, there's apparently, although I haven't seen it myself, but I'm told there's a full list of suppliers for all the solutions that are pre-made and also for the raw ingredients in multiple countries. And then there's a printable version of it and a mobile version. You can download it. That's all available for free at theuniversalantidote.com, which is not my website. I'm not affiliated with it. You know, I don't have any financial involvement whatsoever, and still to this day I'm not sure who runs that site, but I don't know, it says it's powered by WordPress and it does have a lot of good information. So check that out if you want those resources that I mentioned, and chlorine dioxide I think should be part of your supply system, you know, stockpile it. All right, now let's go back to the submarine story, because this is really something amazing. Let's see what we have for you. Breitbart is reporting the following. OceanGate bought carbon fiber for the Titanic sub. Carbon fiber that was, quote, past its shelf life. Oh. So the CEO of OceanGate, who is now dead, you know, turned to mush at the bottom of the Atlantic, Stockton Rush, this is reported by Breitbart, revealed in a conversation with Travel Weekly editor-in-chief Arnie Weissman that he bought expired carbon fiber that was graded for airplanes at a discount for the Titan submersible submarine that met a tragic end with 5 people on board. Don't you have any concerns about that? Weissman told the Washington Post. He was very dismissive, talking about Stockton Rush, the CEO. He was very dismissive and said, no, it's perfectly fine. Having all these certifications for airplanes is one thing, but the carbon fiber was perfectly sound. apparently not. Who buys discount carbon fiber for something you're going to ride in to the bottom of the ocean? So I want to show you some photos of the debris that has been recovered. And let's see, these photos were taken by Paul Daly, the Canadian Press, via Associated Press, and they ran on the Gateway Pundit, but just a couple of shots that, I don't know, they don't really show that much. But check out these photos. So, as you can see, there are pieces and parts of the submarine, I guess, that were retrieved. So apparently the CEO, Rush, who bought the bargain basement discount carbon fiber, he claimed to have collaborated with Boeing on the submarine design. But Boeing says they released a statement saying they had never collaborated with OceanGate or with Rush, and that they had no record of selling carbon fiber to OceanGate. So, given that this is becoming a kind of scandal, shall we call it OceanGate-gate at this point? This is kind of, this is a scandal, right? Like, what was the first Clinton gate? Was it Whitewater Gate? remember the investment scams that the Clintons used to run back in Arkansas? That's going back a ways, back to the 1980s. So Stockton Rush at one point said, quote, I've broken some rules to make this, I was talking about the carbon fiber hull. He says, the carbon fiber and titanium there is a rule that you don't do that. Well, I did, he said. And remember, this is the guy who fired the white guys because he wanted his company to be more inspirational. And now, of course, he's no longer inspirational, except to inspire people to not do stupid things when you're climbing into a vessel to head to the bottom of the ocean. Now, Yahoo News has a headline, presumed human remains recovered from the wreckage of the Titan sub. I love how they use the word presumed, because the U.S. Coast Guard has now said they have found some kind of remains. They think they might be human. Now, quote, medical professionals will formally analyze the remains, which are understood to have been found within the debris from the seafloor at the site of the deep sea vessel's fatal implosion, which killed five people. Now, when they say that they are presumed human remains, that means we're not sure. You know, we looked at it, couldn't really tell. You know, things went horribly bad when they can't tell and they have to bring in medical professionals. They probably have to take DNA samples. Like, is it squid or is it human? That's the only way they're going to know. It's just like a gelatinous mass that was strongly compressed and shredded by the water pressure. And of course, if you listen to my podcast, you know I predicted this is exactly what happened. You know, days before the media announced that this is what happened, right? We were talking about, oh, probably catastrophic hull failure for all these reasons I talked about. And again, a woke company, the CEO's now, he has apparently suicided himself through this. But seriously, folks, discount carbon fiber? Woke decisions? This is an indication of where all woke corporations are going, like Bud Light. You know, Bud Light's sales have plunged faster than this carbon fiber submarine with secondhand carbon fiber. You know, by the way, if you're going to put yourself in some vehicle, like an airplane or a rocket ship or a submarine or a drag racing car, maybe don't take the lowest cost used crap that you can find on the market. You might want to go for quality over price. Just saying. All right, speaking of vehicles, by the way, did you know that heavy electric vehicles cause twice the road damage compared to, you know, regular combustion engine cars because they're so much, you know, heavier? This is reported by Breitbart. This is according to a report from a UK study led by the University of Leeds, found that the average electric car puts 2.24 times more stress on roads than a similar petrol vehicle. They're using the British word for gasoline. And 1.95 times more stress than a diesel engine. So this causes greater movement of asphalt, which can lead to small cracks and can eventually expand into potholes, with local government authorities left to repair the damage. So isn't it interesting? We were just talking about the submarine with the discount carbon fiber run by a woke CEO that probably had some, you know, carbon fiber defects that started out as small cracks and then they became much bigger cracks, and then the whole thing imploded. Well, if all these electric vehicles start driving up and down these roads in these blue cities, also they're going to start out as small cracks, and then they're going to be big cracks, big potholes, and then undrivable roads. So these electric vehicles, which can weigh over 2,000 pounds, by the way, pretty darn heavy for a regular car, 2,000 pounds, not only are they a fire hazard, and by the way, they're not any better for the environment, it turns out, and they use lithium, which in the quantities that are demanded by the car industry, there's not enough lithium on the planet, at least I should say, not able to be accessed and refined and delivered. I mean, there may be plenty of lithium, you know, in Earth's crust. You just can't get to it unless you're going to dig up the bottom of the ocean. But we just found out what happens when you try to go there. Doesn't even work that well. Nevertheless, these lithium battery cars are going to tear up all these roads. And since blue cities are broke anyway, because, of course, they're chasing all the income earners and taxpayers out of their cities by doing crazy things like releasing violent criminals onto the streets and turning their cities into drug dens infested with addicts and violence and rapists and whatever, and they're defunding police, how are they going to have money to fix the roads? Oh, wait, they're not. They're not. If you thought Chicago's potholes were bad already, and they are, just give it another decade with EVs driving up and down those roads in Chicago as the city goes bankrupt and the state goes bankrupt and there's no more money to fix the potholes. So what are you going to do? You're going to have to get a big diesel with big tires in order to just treat those potholes as little speed bumps. You got to have a big rig. That's the answer, by the way. Oh, also, you know parking garages are not designed for 2,000-pound cars. You know that, right? And there was a parking garage that collapsed in, I think it was New York City, or somewhere in the state of New York, a couple months ago, as I recall. And ultimately, I think it was found that it was because there were too many EVs parked on the top floor. I mean, you know those parking garages are only engineered for the cars that existed at the time when it was built. And a lot of these parking garages are 20 years old, 25, some of them more. So what happens when you just stack, you know, twice as heavy vehicles on parking garages? You're going to get collapse. Hence why I prefer never to park in a parking garage, by the way. I mean, are you concerned about these things? Especially think about how many woke engineers probably even designed the newer ones. And these woke engineers were never selected due to ability or, you know, mathematics or anything, but rather just that they were trans or they were sufficiently checking off all the woke checkboxes, you know, and they got the job. They don't know anything about engineering. And so they just wrote a bunch of fake numbers. And then that's what was used to pour the concrete, to choose the PSI of the concrete. You know, some people don't even know there's different PSI of concrete. Amazingly. So yeah, you're going to have a lot of parking garages collapsing in the years ahead, especially in cities that focus on a lot of EVs. And, you know, the acceleration of gravity, 9.8 meters per second. It affects electric vehicles just the same as anybody else. You don't want to be underneath that when it comes tumbling down. Speaking of tumbling down, by the way, let's talk about the fall of democracy in Ukraine. There's a new story out from antiwar.com. The headline, the author is Dave DeCamp. The headline, Zelensky says no elections in Ukraine until the war is over. How convenient. So let me get this straight. So here we have in Ukraine, we have Zelensky, the puppet leader, who, let's see, he has outlawed all political parties except his own. He's outlawed freedom of the press. No media are allowed to operate in Ukraine unless he controls them. Let's see, what else has he outlawed? A bunch of books and plays and things that were based on Russian history. You can't even have Russian books. You might be considered a criminal. And now he says no elections, you know, until the war is over, which, I mean, given the way this is going, how long is that going to be? And Zelensky, you know, his term is due at the end or sometime in 2024. But he's basically going to use the war to stay in power indefinitely, which is exactly what Joe Biden is trying to do in America, by the way. Same thing. They need the war to cancel democracy while we're always being lectured by all these woke idiots in the government and in the media that, oh, we have to send more weapons to Ukraine to do what? To protect democracy, right? What democracy are they talking about? There's no democracy in Ukraine. Ukraine's become a Z dictatorship. You can say it is the dictatorship, except it's not French. It's Ukraine, mixed with a few Nazis in there as well. So look, here's the deal. We want the people of Ukraine to be free. We would love to see the freedom of the press restored. We would love to see free elections restored. We would love to see political freedom and political parties able to function in Ukraine. Now, and freedom of speech, by the way, I forgot. Yeah, if you say anything, if you post anything online against the Zelensky regime in Ukraine, oh, you get visited, you get arrested, right? You disappear. Case in point, where is Gonzalo Lira at the moment, right now? Where is Gonzalo? Nobody's heard from Gonzalo Lira because the secret, what's it called, the GRU or whatever, the secret Z police came in and they arrested him and they took him away because they didn't like what he was saying. So we're not fighting for democracy in Ukraine. We're fighting for dictatorship, funding a dictatorship. Now, again, if Ukraine had free speech and freedom to dissent and freedom to peacefully protest and freedom of elections and all this, and we were fighting for that, that could make some sense. But why wouldn't we just fight for that right here in America? Because we don't have free speech in America either. We're not protecting our borders. We don't have our gun rights protected in America, even though these woke liberals are like, more guns for Ukraine. We got to protect Ukraine's borders. But if you're an American, oh, no guns for you. No border protection for you. Now, if you're Ukrainian and you love your country, you love the blue and yellow Ukraine flag, you know, oh my gosh, you're so wonderful. You're such a patriot. You love your country. Yes, you love your national pride. But if you're an American and you fly the American flag and you love America, they're like, you're a white Christian nationalist racist bigot. You know, that's what they say. Wait a second. Why is it awesome if you're Ukrainian and you love Ukraine, but then you're a bigot if you're American and you love America? What the hell? Pardon my language, but what the hell? This is what leftists have become. And by the way, in another example of the insane leftists rearing their ugly, treacherous heads, here's a story from Summit.News, which is Steve Watson's story. Here it is. I mentioned this earlier, but we'll go into more detail. 250 Hollywood celebrities sign letter demanding big tech censor anyone who opposes trans surgeries on kids. So this letter, again, 250 Hollywood woketards, which is not difficult to find. You can find 250 Hollywood woketards anywhere in Hollywood. I mean, they're everywhere. You don't even have to, you know, hunt for them or anything. They're all there. They're already tripping over each other. Anyway, this letter was sent to the CEOs of YouTube and TikTok and Twitter and Meta, and it was signed by Amy Schumer, Ariana Grande, Demi Lovato, Jamie Lee Curtis, Judd Apatow, Patrick Stewart, and a whole bunch more. Well, I will say, all those people who I just named, you are fascists. You are fascists. Patrick Stewart, you're a fascist. Judd Apatow, you're a fascist. Your movies are pretty darn funny, but you're still a fascist. His movies are very funny. But what is it about these people that they want to censor anybody who doesn't agree with them, even though their own positions are pro-child mutilations? They want to chop the organs off of children. And if you speak out against it, they say you're engaged in hate, and you need to be silent. So this is proof that the trans cult is a cult, and it's also a very powerful political movement. It's a fascist movement. Trans has become actually almost like a nation state. And that's why they fly trans flags at the White House, and they fly trans flags at the embassies and the State Department buildings and all over the place, because trans is conquering the corrupt, illegitimate government and the institutions that occupy America. And it is a trans war on rationality. It's a war on children. It's a war on families, childhood, womanhood. It's a war on reason. As I said in a special report yesterday, there's not even any such thing as transgenderism. It doesn't exist because it's all imaginary. You can't actually change your gender just by wishing it so. And as proof of that, as I pointed out yesterday, why can't, you know, if a man can pretend to be a woman and has to be accepted as a woman, why can't a man pretend to be a pregnant woman and have to be accepted as being pregnant? So have perpetual time off from work by just being perpetually pregnant because you self-identify as a pregnant woman. And, you know, even people on the left will say, well, no, you can't just act like you're pregnant. There's a test for that. A pregnancy test. Well, yeah, there's a test for being a man or a woman too. It's a chromosome test, by the way, and other obvious physiological signs. There's all kinds of tests. It's a way to prove your gender. You can't just make it up. Like, you can't just make up that you're pregnant. So these children, of course, are being abused and groomed. These Hollywood groomers are some of the worst pedophiles and sinister mutilators. I mean, they should do a horror movie about themselves. All the things they do to children. You know, it's not just raping children. It's not just trafficking children. And now it's mutilating children. You know, in Hollywood, they have all these rituals and they drink blood of children and they all kind of satanic, insane stuff, and they murder children. They love, all these people love abortions. Isn't that, you know, no surprise? These people that support pedophilia and grooming and mutilations, they all support abortion, child murder too. So, but they claim that they're the victims of hate and harassment and anti-LGBT disinformation. See, they just want to silence everybody that doesn't go along with their cult. And they especially want to silence people who are former transgenders who are now coming out as adults and saying, oh my God, what did my parents do to me? What did this doctor do to me? What did these surgeons, this hospital? One, I think it's a young woman. She is suing a hospital for, I think the surgery was 13 years ago, or when she was 13, maybe. It was when she was 13, I think. I don't have all the details in front of me, obviously, but it was written up by the Epoch Times, and she's suing the hospital because she was maimed. Her breasts were sliced off. She's scarred permanently. And you're going to see a lot more people turning, you know, 19, 20, 22, whatever, and they're going to come to their senses and say, oh my God, I was caught up in a cult. I was brainwashed in the trans cult. They cut off my scrotum. They cut off my breasts. They made new holes where there shouldn't be holes. They gave me chemical castration. They turned me into something I wasn't, you know. It's going to be lawsuits flying everywhere. Well, guess who wants to silence these former trans people? Oh, yeah. Here are their names. Again, Amy Schumer, Ariana Grande, Demi Lovato, Jamie Lee Curtis, and so on and so forth. Yeah, they want to silence the victims of the trans cult. The victims. How dare you speak out against you being maimed by trans cult doctors and mutilators, surgical mutilators. You can't speak out against that, no. They would, in fact, these people would probably say that someone who is a former trans who is coming out against the mutilations, they would say that person's crazy. Oh, they must have lost their minds to no longer want to be trans. You know, they must have mental illness, they would say. No, you're mentally ill to push trans on kids in the first place. You're mentally ill. You're the fascist. You're the evil people. If anybody should be censored, not that I'm in favor of censorship, but if anybody should be censored, it's you. They should probably silence anybody who's promoting child mutilations. How about that? You know, isn't it funny? These platforms, they all have rules about, oh, you're not supposed to advocate self-harm. And they use that rule to censor anybody who talks about not taking vaccines. Did you know that? So if you say, oh, don't take the COVID vaccine, it might be dangerous. Oh, you're deplatformed because you're advocating self-harm. But if you go on that same platform like Facebook and you say to a 12-year-old child, hey, you should have your balls cut off, you know, you should be all mutilated and chemically castrated. Somehow that's totally acceptable. There's no self-harm there, not according to the libtards running the censorship on Facebook. Hence the need, by the way, for decentralization of content, which brings me to my next point here. So my new show called Decentralized.tv launched yesterday. And that's the new website, by the way, Decentralized.tv. If we're going to get out from under the thumb of these cults, trans fascists, basically they're trans Nazis, let's be honest. That's who they are. And child mutilators and groomers and pedophiles. If we're going to get out from under the thumb of these lunatics who commit violence against children, we've got to decentralize, of course, off of these mainstream tech platforms. And so right now, the best option is to use alternative platforms like Truth Social or Brighton.social or Getter. Those are like Twitter replacements. And even Twitter, by the way, is still engaged in heavy, heavy censorship. So Twitter is not a free speech platform. But ultimately, we've got to move to a Web 3.0 type of structure where there's no central authority that can censor anybody. And that's why I'm working with companies like Qortal, Q-O-R-T-A-L, Qortal. And I interviewed Jason Crow and Mike Winner there. And we're going to be featuring them once again on my new show, again, Decentralized.tv, which is all about getting away from centralized control and the authoritarians and the censors that the left loves, because, of course, they're Nazi, fascist, trans cultists. We got to get away from all of that and help promote technological solutions that can support the freedom to speak so that victims of transgender mutilations might one day be able to raise the alarm and say, hey, don't chop up the little kids without themselves being censored. Right? You see the importance of this? So anyway, if you haven't seen episode one of Decentralized TV, then go to that website right now and watch it. Of course, the episode is free. Decentralized.tv. And then when you're there, you can also sign up for the email list if you wish. And you'll receive an email notification as each new episode comes out. And then also what we're going to do is, for those of you who join the email list, we will tell you what the next upcoming episode is going to cover. So if we're going to interview somebody about a crypto project, we'll tell you what the name of that project is before that issue ever, or before the episode airs. Now, it's not all crypto projects. We're talking to a lot of people about a lot of things. Decentralized food, decentralized medicine, decentralized education, you know, homeschooling, things like that. But we're going to be talking about a lot of tech projects that are based on privacy-oriented crypto, as well as decentralized publishing, which is what Qortal is all about, decentralized content, decentralized peer-to-peer private messaging systems, solutions, you know, all of this. So if you want to be free and not be censored, stop using the platforms that keep pushing censorship and learn about decentralization. And that's the new show, Decentralize.tv. I think you'll find it extremely valuable. And no, by the way, Decentralized.tv was not built with discount secondhand carbon fiber, because that doesn't work very well, it turns out. Okay, let's go to the mosquito story. Here we go, from Yahoo News. Actually, this is from the Miami Herald, published by Yahoo. Malaria alert issued in Florida. Alert. Malaria is running loose in Florida. Why infectious mosquitoes have led to statewide concern. Okay, this is right on time, right? Right on time. Because, of course, Bill Gates has been working on the malaria vaccine, and then they've been breeding mosquitoes, genetically engineered mosquitoes, and releasing them in places like Florida. And what did they say the purpose was of breeding and releasing mosquitoes? Oh, they said it's to stop malaria. Right? Just like they say in India, what's the whole purpose of injecting all the children with polio vaccines? They say, oh, it's to stop polio. But of course, the polio vaccines are the number one cause of polio, aren't they? The point of the vaccines is to cause the polio in order to create a public health emergency that demands more people go get polio vaccines, which are, of course, engineered as infertility weapons and depopulation weapons to bring down the population of India in that case. So what do you think is happening in Florida with the malaria? Shall we just call it weaponized malaria? So here's what I think is going on. You can make up your own mind. I think they bred the mosquitoes, they released the mosquitoes with weaponized malaria, knowing that some people eventually would be infected, and according to the Miami Herald, four people in Sarasota have fallen ill with malaria. Four people. We have to alert the whole state. Oh my gosh. It's an emergency. Four people. So the Florida Department of Health issues an alert. The CDC issues an alert. Again, alert, alert. Four people, malaria. And what's the point of this? Is to get everybody freaked out about malaria so they go get what? A malaria vaccine. Which is, of course, about to be rolled out. And what will the malaria vaccine be designed to do? Oh, to kill people and cause infertility, of course. And this has been under development for years. You can go back to 2015. CNN, world's first malaria vaccine, backed by Bill Gates, gets a green light. Oh, green light for future use in babies in Africa. The European Medicines Agency gave the Mosquirix vaccine, which, let's face it, sounds like a queer mosquito. Mosquirix vaccine has been given a favorable review after 30 years of research by who? Oh, GlaxoSmithKline and the PATH Malaria Vaccine Initiative. The drug will now be examined by the World Health Organization. Okay, so this was back in 2015. Since then, malaria vaccines have undergone more development, more tweaking by all kinds of different companies, and you've seen Bill Gates and Fauci and others warning about, you know, the next pandemic's going to be even worse, right? That's, you hear them saying that all the time. We better be ready. Because they're working on it. They're the ones releasing it. I mean, it's so obvious at this point. That's what the whole COVID operation was, essentially a staged pandemic to get people to line up and take vaccines that are designed to kill people and to cause infertility. It's a global depopulation event. And now it looks like potentially this is part two. Now, we can't prove this yet. There's only four people in Sarasota that have apparently been diagnosed with malaria. Only four people. So it's possible, but not likely, that this is not the big globalist plan yet. But we know that they do have a plan involving malaria. So this might be the leading edge of that. I guess we'll have to watch and see where this goes. But of course, they will never tell you what the cure for malaria is that was used throughout Central America and South America and in Africa. What's the cure for malaria? What's the treatment? I mean, actually, there's a couple of treatments I can think of, but the number one treatment is artemisinin, which is the extract from wormwood herb. Wormwood, or artemisinin, treats malaria. In fact, it just eliminates it. And isn't it interesting that artemisinin also has been shown over the last few years to be highly effective against COVID? COVID. But of course, if you mention artemisinin on any of the centralized platforms, and you know, YouTube or Twitter or anywhere, you will be banned. Oh, you can't let the public know about artemisinin. Just like you were not allowed to talk about ivermectin. And that's not a coincidence, because ivermectin treats malaria and ivermectin treats COVID. Interesting. Why is COVID treated by medicines that treat parasites? Think about that. Yeah, that will lead you down a couple of rabbit holes right there. But artemisinin, I'm not even sure where to get it. Let me spell it for you in case you want to look it up. Artemisinin is spelled A-R-T-E-M-I-S-I-N-I-N. In Chinese medicine, what is this? I'm looking at the English word. Qing hao shu. I need to get the correct Chinese pronunciation for that. I'm just reading the English attempt at that. Anyway, this is an anti-malarial drug that's derived from the sweet wormwood plant known as Artemisia annua. So artemisinin is a sesquiterpene lactone, which is a compound made up of three isoprene units bound to cyclic organic esters, in case you're wondering about the chemistry. And it's distilled from the dried leaves or the flower clusters of the sweet wormwood plant. And this is, I'm reading from Britannica.com. This is the encyclopedia. I guess they haven't scrubbed Britannica.com yet of the truth about artemisinin. And you're going to find all kinds of interesting things about artemisinin. I was taking artemisinin quite heavily during COVID, by the way. And some people say that artemisinin can treat cancer. There's been a lot of research on that, or different forms of cancer. But we know for sure that this stops malaria. And we know for sure that this stops COVID, or at least helps the body stop COVID. And that's why I was stocking up on this quite a bit. But again, if there's a malaria outbreak in Florida, which already there's already been an emergency declared, you're never going to hear the media tell you what you need to know, which is that, hey, you could grow your own medicine. It's called sweet wormwood. You could grow it for free. They will never say that because, of course, the corporate media is opposed to human health and human survival. They are opposed to it. They are nothing but prostitutes for big pharma and the vaccine industry and the depopulation agenda. They are there to push disinformation to deliberately get people killed. And that's what the media proved they're all about during COVID. They attacked ivermectin instead of teaching people you could save lives with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. They attacked zinc and vitamin C and quercetin and all these things instead of talking about how they could be used. They attacked the existence of the immune system. So folks, when the malaria outbreak starts to gain speed, you're going to see the exact same thing. It's going to be a total cover-up of artemisinin and sweet wormwood herb and ivermectin, and they're going to try to drive everybody with a bunch of fear, a bunch of psychological terrorism operations run by the media. They're going to try to drive people into getting vaccinated with the new malaria vaccine brought to you by Pfizer, you know, or whatever, brought to you by Carl's Jr. And you're supposed to just line up and get injected with this crazy thing, whatever this thing is now. Oh, to be emergency use authorization, FDA approved, you know, stamped here and stamped there. It's all good. Yeah, trust us, you know. And this will just be the second wave of die-offs of people who are dumb enough to still line up and be injected with experimental vaccines. Whoever those people are, there are fewer and fewer of them around, but they still exist. You notice how the media and the medical establishment and the globalists and the government, they never want you to know about the actual uses of some very powerful molecules, often off-patent medications like ivermectin or artemisinin derived from herbs. Again, you can grow artemisinin yourself. There's another common chemical out there. It's a drug. It's a deworming drug used in veterinary medicine. It's called fenbendazole. It's also used, by the way, in various, like for goats and things like that. I have some fenbendazole for this very purpose. Many people claim that it kills cancer cells, and some people claim that they've cured stage 4 cancer using fenbendazole. Now, I haven't done a deep dive into this, so I can't reach a conclusion yet, but I am assigning some research on this to one of my writers to do a story about that. But, you know, look, they covered up ivermectin for treating COVID. They tried to silence anybody talking about artemisinin for malaria or ivermectin for malaria. And you can bet they're going to be attacking fenbendazole for, you know, any kind of cancer usage. Because, again, all these molecules are dirt cheap, off-patent prescriptions or things you can grow yourself. And they work. And they set humanity free. And this is about decentralized medicine, by the way. And, you know, come to think of it, I would like to interview somebody who's an expert in natural medicine who can come on and talk about these things on my new show, Decentralized.tv. So if you happen to know somebody, maybe a doctor or a researcher who can talk about ivermectin, artemisinin, and fenbendazole as treatments, then let us know. Email us at decentralizedtv at protonmail.com, I think is the correct email. You can find the contact on decentralized.tv website, by the way. But I'd like to get somebody on to talk about this. Of course, all the fact checkers are going to be out there like, oh no, you can't treat cancer. That's nonsense. Just like the fact checkers said ivermectin doesn't do anything for COVID. The fact checkers will say the herbs are useless. Right? That's the job of the fact checkers. They are lie pushers. They're not fact checkers. They're lie pushers. They cover up the truth and they hide behind the label of fact checkers. You know, here's a fact. Vitamin C is a very useful supplement for human immune function. And fact checkers won't even confirm that. They won't confirm that vitamin D prevents cancer or that zinc prevents low birth weight babies, by the way. You know, the fact checkers, what an embarrassment to humanity, an embarrassment to logic and reason and truth and transparency, so-called fact checkers. What a joke. What a pathetic bunch of losers having those jobs. All they are is propagandists. Their job is to run around and lie to everybody and cover up the facts, actually. Just pathetic. And if you think about it, by the way, these fact checkers, they also attack chlorine dioxide. Oh, it's useless. Yeah, it's useless. But then every country around the world, except America, uses it to kill COVID. You know, it's like, man, the average oblivious American that doesn't look at alternative media, they're living in an artificial world. It's a Truman Show. And everything that they think they know is false. And they have no contact with reality. In reality, ivermectin's awesome. Chlorine dioxide is awesome. Fembendazole does have other uses. You know, artemisinin has uses. You can grow your own medicine. You know, resveratrol is an amazing molecule that is grown in grape skins and grape leaves and so on. I tell you, there are so many legitimate treatments and cures are available right now, but you're not allowed to know any of them. And this is one of the reasons why I'm so heavily censored, is because I know about these things and I talk about them. And they haven't silenced me, have they? I mean, they've silenced my reach, of course, on all the mainstream platforms, so I built my own platforms. And yeah, the platforms I built, they're smaller than the mainstream platforms, but at least we don't have to self-censor. At least when people seek out the truth, there's a place they can find it. It's called Brighteon.com. Or my new show, Decentralized.tv. You get the idea. So the truth is out there for anybody willing to look for it. That's why, you know, sometimes I hear people talk about, well, you know, a family member died of COVID. And I said, well, how come they didn't use ivermectin? And I'll hear excuses. Well, they didn't know about ivermectin. Like, what, they don't have access to the internet? I mean, all they got to do is type in naturalnews.com in a browser. I mean, how hard is that? Anybody can do that. Well, they use Google and they use Facebook and it, you know, they didn't have access to it. Well, maybe using Google and Facebook is a death sentence. In this case, it actually is. If you rely on Google and Facebook and YouTube as your sources of information, it's a kind of suicide because you're deprived access to the things that could save your life. You want to live? Read naturalnews.com or listen to videos like right here on Brighteon.com or check out other alternative platforms like Rumble and BitChute and Odyssey and so many others. You want to live? You're going to have to get informed. You can't just be lazy. I'm just going to use the default search engine that came with the browser. I just type in whatever I want and it just goes to Google. I don't know. Like if you're that person, you're essentially jumping off a tall building. You're committing suicide. But people who want to be informed, there's lots of opportunities to be informed about these things. Nobody has to die from cancer. Nobody has to die from COVID. Nobody has to die from diabetes, heart disease, you know, liver toxicity, internal bleeding from non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Nobody has to die from any of these things. It's a lack of knowledge from which people die, which is, of course, a biblical concept. It's the lack of knowledge that kills everybody. If they only knew, they wouldn't have to die. So that's our job, is to educate, share, teach people the truth in order to save lives and to help end human suffering. And that's why we are at odds with the globalists, because the goal of the globalists is to, of course, exterminate human lives. They want fewer people to be living on this planet. You and I want more people to be alive, to survive, to not suffer, to have healthy children, healthy families, and so on. You see, that's why we're at odds. It's not about, frankly, the science. It's about the fact that big tech and the globalists, they're all anti-human, and you and I are pro-human. That's the conflict. It's not about facts versus disinformation. No, it's about anti-human versus pro-human. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Understand that, and you'll understand the way the internet works right now. All right, now with that said, by the way, we're going to jump into the interview with Dick Russell here shortly, of course, with his book about the real RFK Jr., and RFK Jr. being someone who, I believe, also wants to help end human suffering. I think RFK Jr. is a pro-human candidate. He's not a globalist. The globalists hate this guy. They hate him. He's getting no funding from the globalist corporations, of course. I mean, the drug companies don't want to see him as president because he'll go after him. You know, big tech doesn't want to see him as president because he'll end censorship, or at least he'll make an attempt to. You know, the big ag, they don't want him president because he's opposed to GMOs and pesticides. And all the industrial polluters that are, you know, distributing lead and mercury all over the place. Yeah, they don't want him to be president because he's opposed to toxic heavy metals in food and in the water and in the environment and so on. I mean, RFK Jr. is a pro-human guy. That's one of the reasons I like him. I'd love to see him get the nomination for the Democrat Party. So we're going to go to Dick Russell here in a minute. Couple of specials coming up that I do want to make you aware of from our sponsors. Cali Key, which is the drop-in replacement for your AR-15 that turns it into a bolt-action rifle. It replaces the BCG, which is the bolt carrier group. It's really easy. It only takes a minute. They're running some kind of special over the July 4th weekend. Use discount code RANGER there to get special savings. I'm not even sure what the discount is yet because it's not live on their website yet, but try discount code RANGER. And then also, by the way, hoplitearmor.com, H-O-P-L-I-T-E, hoplitearmor.com. They have bumped up their discount. If you use discount code RANGER, I think you're going to be able to save 20 to 25%. Just during the July 4th holiday, which will end, I think Monday night or Tuesday. But if you want to get either of these things, try those discount codes over the weekend for some extra savings. Also, I think we're going to have some specials at healthrangerstore.com, although it hasn't been officially announced yet. But I'll tell you about it tomorrow if it is going to happen. Some July 4th specials to help celebrate freedom and liberty and the birth of our nation. A nation hopefully we can defend. But get ready for that. Support us at healthrangerstore.com. Lab tested, of course, certified organic, almost everything. The cleanest, most heavily scrutinized food and superfoods and nutritional supplements on the planet, bar none. And there's no mRNA in anything. It's not like secretly laced with mRNA, as some of the food supply appears to be soon. Oh, crazy times. So we thank you for your support of ourselves and our sponsors. And with that said, we're going to jump into the interview here with Dick Russell. And he's the author of the book, The Real RFK Jr., which is also available as an audiobook. The book is out right now. It's from Skyhorse Publishing. And it will teach you a lot about this amazing man who wants to be president. So check it out. And if you want to make a donation to the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. political campaign, just go to kennedy24.com. And by the way, the deadline is July 1st for, I think, the SEC filing, which is only another day or so here. So if you're going to donate to the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. campaign, make that donation, make it before Saturday. How about that? And then that will help him qualify for debates, if the Democrats will even have debates. The Democrats rig everything so much. They're going to do everything they can to try to stop Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but with your support, he can overcome that. So Kennedy24.com and sign up for their email list and enjoy this interview with author Dick Russell. This is a fascinating interview. You're going to learn things about history, American history, the JFK assassination, and much more, things that probably you didn't know. I found this way more fascinating and more encompassing. It's more than simply about RFK Jr. It's about America and the Kennedy family and the legacy and the secret CIA cabal that has seized control of America for the last six decades. So this is an amazing interview. Check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we are joined by author Dick Russell, who's a New York Times bestselling author, and he's the author of the new book that's just come out called The Real RFK Jr., Trials of a Truth Warrior. Excuse me. It's available on Amazon.com and other booksellers as well. Mr. Russell, thank you for joining me today, and I really look forward to this interview to ask you what you learned and what you've written about RFK Jr. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be with you today.
It's great to have you on. Now, tell us just a bit. I mean, the book has just come out. It's from Skyhorse Publishing. That's the publisher. You're the author. How did this come to be, and how were you able to put this together? It seems so quickly.
Well, I started it a year ago in the summer, which was long before Bobby came out and said he was going to run for president. I've known him for more than 20 years. We first met around environmental issues. One was I was doing a book called Eye of the Whale, which was about the gray whales in Baja, Mexico, that were being threatened, their habitat, where they come to have their young every year by a big industrial salt works that Mitsubishi and the Mexican government were planning to build there. And Bobby was involved as an environmental lawyer for the Natural Resources Defense Council. And both he and I would go there. We're there visiting the whales. I mean, if anybody's ever done this, it's an amazing experience at Laguna San Ignacio. You go and you're actually petting whales in the wild.
Wow.
Oh, and the mothers are introducing their babies. And it's just, you know, it's an incredible, otherworldly, actually, experience. And so that's where I met him, was around that. And then both he and I were sports fishermen, and I had written a book called Striper Wars in 2005 about the fight to save the Atlantic striped bass. He was very involved with the same fish, working to curb the pollution on the Hudson River, which he was very successful at. So that was really the beginning of our relationship, was around the environment. And then we just had a lot of other things in common over time, and worked on some other projects together. And then after his book, The Real Anthony Fauci, came out, and he was being just vilified by the major media, as a lot of people know. I mean, this has been going on for some time, but you know, he was being labeled anti-vaxxer and conspiracy theorist and wacko, crazy. And I had known this guy for a long time, and I knew what he'd accomplished. And I thought, you know, this is really wrong. And something, when Skyhorse Tony Lyons came to me and said, you know, some people had been suggesting that maybe there should be a biography of Bobby written. And he said, I know you're really busy, which I was, but, you know, I felt, yeah, I'm the guy, the right guy to do this, because
wow,
I know him really well. And I feel like I can, you know, so he basically opened a lot of doors for me. I mean, this was not an as told to, per se, you know, it was not something that I ghost wrote. I had the independence of a biographer to write the truth as I saw it about this individual. And so I traced his whole life. He sat, but he gave me access to his private journals in some cases.
Oh, wow.
Through the years, which was pretty great, you know, and he also opened doors to interview friends of his and acquaintances. And so I set out on this trail, and suddenly, you know, a few months ago, it took on a whole nother dimension, because I was writing a book, a biography of a presidential candidate, which
right,
I had not expected to do when I started this project.
Well, let me ask you a question right up front, though. Just, I'm sure the audience is asking this now. And just to be clear, you know, I consider RFK Jr. to be an American hero, a real treasure to this nation. Even though I may not politically agree with him on certain issues, it's so far beyond that. The man he is transcends politics, and yeah, that's what's extraordinary about him. But our audience might be asking, is it possible that your coverage of him has been shaded or biased by your friendship with him, and that it might have caused you to gloss over
perhaps mistakes he made or legitimate criticisms against him in the past. Is that an issue that has come up?
Well, I've really done my best to not fall into that trap. I mean, Bobby's been through some very tough stuff in his life, and I knew going in, and so did he, that I couldn't just gloss over that, that, you know, it had to be talked about to some degree anyway, along with his successes. He had some failures, and especially in his early years, you know, he was not surprisingly traumatized by the death of first his uncle, JFK, and then his father, who was assassinated when he was only 15, just turned 15. So it was a really hard time for him. I mean, the whole family, of course, but he was a particularly vulnerable young age, you know, to go through that. And he went through a time of rebellion anyway in the 1960s at that point. But he was like, he went out, you know, there was one summer he just took off. And I guess it was the summer of 69, might have been 1970, I forgot now. But he just took off and again went out there and lived with bums. You know, he rode freight trains with hobos and went to Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. And nobody really even knew where he was. And he wanted it that way. So I chronicle that too, because, you know, he also learned a lot. I think that was the way I see it, is that was sort of the beginning of his real connection to he'd always loved animals. And he was growing up, he wanted to be a veterinarian, and, you know, and his parents encouraged that. But, you know, I think he was able to connect in those early years of after the tragedy to just regular people, you know, starting with bums, you know, and on the freights, and then going to Latin America. He had a mentor, a really amazing guy named Lem Billings, who had been his uncle JFK's best friend all the way back to when they were in school together at Choate in the 1930s. And after the death of his father, Lem took Bobby under his wing and took him to a ranch in Colombia that he had and other parts of Latin America to introduce him to people, again, who had very little, you know, the campesinos. And Bobby just loved being there, loved being with these people. And so he was able to connect, you know, the positive side of what happened to him at that age was that he was able to connect to folks like that. At the same time, he was going through a crisis of addiction, which went on for a long time. And, you know, he and I sat down and talked about this, how to address this. He didn't want to avoid it. In fact, he found that being in AA, which he went into in 1983, Alcoholics Anonymous, was a huge turning point in his life that he continued to honor and respect. And he still goes to meetings to this day. Wow. And he's helped a lot of people. I mean, literally hundreds of people with, you know, similar problems that he worked through in order to become, you know, an environmental lawyer and advocate.
He's always struck me as someone who's very compassionate, very, very human, really cares about other human beings. And that's, you know, that's something that I feel like I really resonate with him on that point. And even caring for animals and their habitat. And just so that you know where I'm coming from in the audience, you know, I'm a pro Second Amendment, pro firearms person, and I own lots of firearms, and I've never shot an animal. And I do not hunt because I can't, my compassion, even wild hogs on my ranch in Texas, I say hello to them. I don't shoot them, which is very different from a lot of other people who tend to have firearms in places like Texas. But I've always had that empathy for other conscious beings, whether they might be a wild hog, which has a family, has a memory, has consciousness, has a first hog perspective, you could say, not first person, but first hog perspective. And I feel like when I'm talking to Bobby, that he has this empathy, this love for humanity and for our planet and for the animals, and it just exudes from him. And I feel like with so many people out there in the political spectrum who don't seem to give a damn about their fellow human being, nor animals, nor habitat, nor the ocean, the microplastics, pollution, heavy metals, whatever, Bobby Kennedy just really stands out as someone who cares. It's not a slogan, it's not an act. It's who he is.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. That's the guy that I know too. And, you know, he's learned a lot. I mean, he's a falconer, you know. I went on a falconing expedition with him one time, and he does these a lot. He takes people out into the wild, and falconing is an ancient sport, you know, where you train the birds that they'll come to you and land on your arm. And he's been doing that for a long, long time and has this real passion for birds, you know, and as well as animals. And he had a whole menagerie when he was growing up, and had a pet lion cub that he received, which was, what was the name, the nickname of it? It was like Bad Boy. That was the name of his lion cub. he was given to him by a friend of his father's, the TV talk show host, Jack Parr, brought it back from Africa, and he raised this lion cub.
Wow.
Till it got bigger, and then, you know, they had to finally give it away. But it's real in him. I mean, his love for the outdoors. But he also says, and has made a point of saying this in many speeches, that, you know, we're not just saving the birds and the bees and the animals, you know, for their sake, but it's for how they enrich us, how the, you know, the feeling that exists between, you know, man and beast, man and bird. And so that's a real thing in him. And it's made working on environmental issues and public health issues too, you know, something that's from the heart and the gut. I mean, he is, he's a guy who, he's got a lot of courage, and
yeah,
he learned a lot of that, you know, whitewater rafting these wild rivers in Latin America and later in Canada. He'd take people out on these expeditions, which I write about in the book too, to some degree, you know, that could be quite scary.
Yeah,
with waterfalls and, you know, major, you know, sinkholes, house holes that could fall into, and there were a couple times when he was lucky to have survived that.
Yes.
But it was so, yeah, I mean, the Kennedy thing, right, is you test yourself and you take risks and you learn the importance of that, as well as the conversations at the dinner table where you learn how to debate and argue out points. And all of that, of course, served him in good stead when he became a lawyer later on.
Let me just mention to people, sorry to interrupt, but I want to mention there's an audiobook version available also. So yeah, if you go on Amazon.com or Audible.com, there's an audiobook, there's a Kindle version, and then there's the hard copy coming, yep, all coming out. Perhaps
out
by the time they're out. Okay. So when people see this interview, it should be available. I mean, there's only going to be a 1 day delay. And I also want to mention that Kennedy24.com is the website for if you want to make a campaign donation to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And it's critical to do so if you want to do so before July 1st. Let me just bring that up. Kennedy24.com. Make a donation before July 1st, because I think that's a milestone reporting day for the Federal Elections Commission. And join his email list as well. Here you see Reclaim Democracy, email, phone number, name, and zip, and right there you can join his campaign. Now, he has not, of course, been offered large money from probably the pharmaceutical companies or the oil companies or the pesticide companies or any of these other big companies. So that tells you something, doesn't it, Dick? I mean, that RFK Jr. is not owned by corporate America, is he?
He sure is not. You know, he's if anything, he is a danger to certain aspects of corporate America, that not all of it. I mean, he's a free market capitalist, is the way he talks about himself. He believes in the free market, but he just doesn't see that that's what's really happening anymore in our country, that it's mostly socialism for the rich. These huge subsidies going to oil and gas and coal companies and pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah,
too.
Corporate, yeah, welfare.
It's corporate as we welfare. Call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's, you know, the definition years ago of fascism, when Mussolini was in power in World War II, was a merger of the state and corporate powers.
That's right.
My fear is, and I think his too, certainly, and that's what he's fighting for. He's fighting to salvage democracy. Yeah, he's a fighter for democracy and for the middle class, which he sees as disappearing in this country, and the gap between rich and poor becoming wider all the time, and certainly it widened during the pandemic, you know, where I think it's 500 new billionaires were created. And many people recently, of course, as far on the lower end of society, lost their food stamps.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the inequities are huge, and that's what he is out there to address. And I think we're in a desperate time.
We really are. Yeah, we're seeing the destruction of the middle class. The middle class American dream is all but vanished. The billionaire rich are getting richer and owning more, controlling more, and the poor, the number of poor, is growing substantially as the economic policies, I would call it crony capitalism, is yeah. kind of what's happening right now, is disastrous. And it's not only disastrous under, I would say, of course, Joe Biden, but also that same trend was taking place under Trump as well. So this is not one party versus another party. This is the structure of our economy. It's not structured in an egalitarian way where real people have a shot. Can I ask you about the JFK assassination and his father's assassination as well? And then Bobby has said publicly recently that he has some fear, or I don't know if he used the word fear, but he's concerned that they may try to assassinate him if he were to become president. And I think that's a legitimate fear. Did you talk with him about that, or is it in the book at all, or what are your thoughts on that subject?
Yeah, well, it's a big subject. I'll start by saying he has really good security, and that's by design. And you know, I have done three books on the assassination of his uncle. First one I published in 1992, so some years before I ever met Bobby, and I knew a lot about his father's assassination as well. I never felt comfortable talking about the fact that I'd even written those books, and when I first got to know him, because our relationship was around the environment, and I didn't know how, you know, I didn't there wasn't anything I wanted from him about that, and I didn't know if he'd be comfortable talking about it, and he wasn't until I think it was 2008, or with myself, it was like 2013, the 50th anniversary of his uncle's assassination. When he started to want to know, I never even talked about it, but he found out that I'd written these books. And so he wanted to know what I knew. And he had read a book by Jim Douglas called JFK and the Unspeakable, which it's an incredible book. And it's about that era and the forces responsible for having eliminated his uncle. So he has finally come out recently and talked very publicly about the fact that he believes, and with good reason, because there's a lot of evidence to support this, that elements of the CIA and not the CIA per se, but elements, rogue elements, worked with Cuban exiles and mob figures and people like maybe H.L. Hunt, the Texas oil man who hated Kennedy, to eliminate him in 1963. And then in 68, you know, Bobby went to see Sirhan in prison. I don't know how many people know that, but it happened just a few years ago. And he did advocate for Sirhan's parole, for his release. Sirhan was, as most people know, the accused killer of his father, accused assassin. He was definitely in the pantry of the Ambassador Hotel. He fired shots. But what a lot of people may not realize is that those shots, and there were 13 found in the pantry, in the wall, and also that hit people. There were only 8 bullets in Sirhan's gun. Sirhan was firing from one direction, from the front, and Robert Kennedy was killed from behind.
Do you mean the capacity of his firearm was only 8 rounds?
Yes, that was the capacity.
Was it a semi-automatic pistol?
No.
It was a revolver?
Yeah, it was a revolver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a revolver.
Okay.
So that's the number of bullets that were in it and were found, you know, that had landed somewhere.
Okay.
And there were 13. This was covered up by the LAPD, by the way, for a long time. But there was what happened that night has never been adequately explained. And the other aspect of this is that Sirhan, to this day, and even at the time in court back in those days, he has no memory of what happened. He doesn't remember going into the pantry. Now, you could say, well, maybe he just has selective amnesia or something, but there was such a thing going on at that time, and who knows where it is today. But the CIA had a program called MKUltra. It used to be called Project Artichoke before that. I've looked into this pretty extensively. And it was a program designed to counter the Russians and what they were doing during the Cold War, but also to figure out, could you control human behavior through the use of hypnosis and drugs?
Right.
And could you even create assassins doing that? There are records that still exist that show that the CIA was trying to do this in the mid-1950s.
Yes. So I think our audience they're all familiar with at least the concept of MKUltra, and that it's in fact many documents have been declassified surrounding it. So yeah, you're on the right track. So Sirhan believes that perhaps he was drugged and set up as a patsy for this, or what's he saying?
He says he told Bobby that day in the prison that he said, I did not kill your father, and I don't remember what happened.
Huh.
So that's all he knows.
Well,
there was a girl, there was a famous story, I guess. We don't have to go too far into the weeds on this, but there was a girl in a polka dot dress that was seen by others right before Sirhan went into the pantry with him and looking like they were giving him a message. So was that some kind of trigger word to get him in the right place at the right time to fire the shots that he would get arrested as the assassin?
Right.
We don't know.
But. Well, I'm convinced it was, especially the assassination of his uncle, of President JFK, was no question in my mind that was a CIA-related operation. And yeah. What I think is so fascinating and somewhat horrifying about stepping back and realizing where we are now and why RFK Jr.'s attempt at the presidency is so critical for America is because I believe, and I think most of our audience believes, that the United States of America has been a captured regime under the control of a deep state cabal since the assassination of JFK.
I believe the same thing. I believe that there was a coup d'etat that day that has never been resolved. Even though at least 60-some percent of the American people believe there was a conspiracy, and in fact, the House Select Committee on Assassinations in the 1970s concluded just the opposite of what the Warren Commission said, was that there was indeed a conspiracy, meaning more than one shooter.
Yes.
It wasn't just Lee Harvey Oswald, if it was Lee Harvey Oswald at all. And I think there was a cover-up that happened for different reasons. Not everybody was part of this evil cabal, but I believe what happened, and there's pretty good evidence for this, was that Earl Warren, who was in charge of the Warren Commission, put in charge by the new president, Johnson, was told, look, we got to just let this rest because Oswald has these ties to the Russians and the Cubans, and if the truth comes out, we're going to have World War III. Now, this was a cover story. I mean, this was not, I'm not saying it's Johnson's cover story, but the people who really pulled this off were not Russians or Cubans, but it was made to look that way.
Right. And it's, in retrospect, first of all, I think a lot of Americans today, after having lived through the Trump years and they've seen how the deep state went after Trump and created a fake dossier and so on, all these things. And then the COVID years and all the different shenanigans that went on, I think a lot more Americans are willing to take a look back at the past of significant events like JFK's assassination with a fresh look and to reconsider the evidence of malfeasance, corruption, cover-ups, what have you, because now people have lived through perhaps parallel examples of government or institutions or rogue elements of government taking away their freedoms and rights and exerting power in a non-democratic way, right? Your thoughts, go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We had an event back then that we've never come to terms with as a country, and in a sense, it's been a creeping decay ever since. I mean, we've just moved into this now a morass where people can't talk to each other anymore. You're either woke or you're not woke, or you're this or you're that, and there's no civil discourse. There's no, I mean, we're just in a really desperate state, and I think it began 60 years ago this year.
Yeah.
And that people also are really still interested. I've been struck by it. I mean, lots of people I talk to. I'm doing a podcast series for the 60th anniversary with Rob Reiner and Soledad O'Brien, where it's going to be a 10-part series that really delves into what really did happen to JFK.
I would love to invite you back on, by the way, just to talk about your previous work with the JFK assassination. I was good friends with the late Jim Mars.
Yeah,
and
I knew Jim.
Yeah, and Jim, you know, he was a very methodical researcher and so on, dearly missed. But I would love to have you on again to talk about JFK. But let's bring it back to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. right now, if you don't mind. And you mentioned how the country is so divided right now. One of the things that strikes me about Bobby here is that he brings people together. He's a healer. I have a lot of conservative leaning friends, obviously, and so many of them want to vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, well, I know and they should, because he is somebody that he's worked. I spell this out a lot in the book with various chapters. He learned very early how to work with people that didn't necessarily share all of his views on things, and so he worked with a Republican upstate senator in New York, a farmer, that hated him when they first met, and they learned how to work together to help craft the New York Watershed Agreement to protect the water supply for everybody upstate and in New York City. He did it again, you know, a number of times. He worked with a Republican businessman in New York State to stop hydraulic fracturing, fracking in that area, because people realized that it was harming the environment and harming people. So, you know, he worked with commercial fishermen. He's worked with farmers. I mean, he for all of his wealth and privilege, which of course he grew up in, he's a regular guy in a lot of ways, and he's fun to be with, and he likes to, you know, he can have a good time with a famous actor like his friend Alec Baldwin, or with the, you know, the commercial fisherman or the cop, you know, he worked with on getting stronger environmental laws passed in New York. So I think that's what people are responding to, is that he does give a damn, you know, he's somebody who sincere. His passion isn't made up. He's not a quitter. You know, once he's a dog on a bone. You know, with issues that he feels are real, and it doesn't matter. You know, this whole public health issue. He's lost so many friends, and family members have turned against him.
Oh yeah, that's what's extraordinary. But you know, what I love about him is that he has been through what many of us have been through in terms of censorship, of being vilified, falsely accused, smeared through the corporate media. And honestly, I don't think that a person is qualified to be the president of this country unless they have been dragged through those experiences, as many of us have in independent media, or perhaps that even you might be strongly criticized for writing a book about RFK Jr., who knows? But we all, those of us who dare to tell the truth about any issue, or at least the truth as we see it, you know, in good faith as we see it, we are vilified, we are deplatformed, we are demonetized, we are cast as villains in society. And so when I see that happening to RFK Jr., it makes me know that he understands the need for debate, for conversation, for freedom of speech. You know, you can't say, the consensus is clear in science, and we achieve consensus by banning all dissenting views. You know, that doesn't work, but that's exactly what's happening today. And Bobby won't put up with that. He will support freedom of speech because he has been through this. At least that's my understanding. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been going through it now for more than 10 years. You know, I mean, he used to be the darling of the New York Times, for example. He could publish an op-ed on any environmental issue that was happening.
Right.
And did many times. And also most of the other liberal media, so-called, you know, where where they would, you know, he'd be on all these shows. He was giving lectures all over the country and all over the world, making a very good living doing that. Suddenly it was all gone. He hasn't been able to write an op-ed for the Times or any other big paper, I think, since, I don't know, 2010, 2011, somewhere in there. And he can't even get a letter to the editor published. He can't refute what's being said about him.
Yes, right.
I mean, there's something wrong with this. And now, I mean, all of these articles coming out, it's really pretty outrageous what they label him as. I mean, as if the guy's crazy. I mean, you know, he was, I don't know if you saw his talk with Bill Maher the other night. It was really good. And you know, they were having a great time together, but it was real. You know, they were willing to go at it on certain things and find common ground. And that's what you say. It's all about conversation. It's all about relationships. I mean, that's how you get things done, is you forge relationships with people that, you know, you don't always agree with. And he's capable of doing that. And you know, he's in the sense he's a healer. I mean, I'm thinking about it now as we talk, you know. I mean, he has had to heal internally from the scars of the external events, of course, that killed his family members. But you know, he's had to, you know, bring those parts of himself together and forge a much stronger individual with true spiritual values. I mean, he is a spiritual guy.
Yes.
And a psychological thinker, you know?
Yes. Well, absolutely. I completely agree. Now, but let me ask you this. How would he be as president? Because the stresses and also the deep state threatens you, right? I'm sure that this kind of conversation happens to every president that they want to control. They just say, look, the minute after you win the election, they just have a meeting with you. You know, deep state comes in. This is my guess. They come in, CIA, whoever, they say, look, you're going to do what we want you to do, or we're going to murder your entire family. And
I think,
yeah.
I think that's happened in the past. And I mean, Jesse Ventura told me a story. I did 5 books with Jesse Ventura. And one of the first things he talked to me about was once he got elected independent governor of Minnesota, the first thing that happened was, you know, suddenly he realizes there's a CIA in Minnesota. And they all said to talk to him about how, you know, we're with the CIA and we're keeping tabs on you. And then, of course, he runs off to Cuba and goes to see Fidel Castro not too long after. Because Ventura didn't take any crap either. But it will not be certainly easy. But it wasn't easy for his father and his uncle either. I mean, look what they went through and how close we came when he was a boy in 1962 to, you know, Armageddon, annihilation, nuclear holocaust, if the Joint Chiefs of Staff had had their way, and if those two brothers had not been in power,
yes,
then I would be sitting here talking.
That's right. You're referring to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We were so close to annihilation.
We were, and so, you know, Bobby lived through that, and that's why he talks today about how he wants to. He's a Kennedy Democrat. He wants to be a peace candidate. He wants to end that war in Ukraine.
Yes.
And have a dialogue with, you know, a guy he really can't stand, Vladimir Putin. But, you know, he would talk to him.
Right. And so did his uncle, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the way, if you're a leader of a country, you talk to other countries' leaders, which the current, the Joe Biden group is not talking to Putin. And so how do we possibly avert World War III if they won't talk to each other? But anyway, you can comment, but that's, I'm getting carried away.
Well, you know, it's just like there was no, recently, I guess, Blinken went over there, but to talk with the China's premier. But before that, we wouldn't even talk to China.
Yeah.
And you know, that of course, like the example that was set for Bobby was that his uncle, JFK, through a back channel, actually, through a private communication, had this whole relationship with Nikita Khrushchev, his counterpart in the Soviet Union. And they exchanged personal letters over the period of a year after the missile crisis happened, aimed at let's end this thing. We've got to stop nuclear testing in the atmosphere, or we're poisoning our entire atmosphere. And let's cut back on nuclear weapons. And he and Khrushchev were, and with Castro too, you know, we agreed, we're not going to keep trying to kill you, and we're not going to invade your country, and we'll take our missiles out of Turkey. I mean, there were compromises made in the course of conversation that basically saved the world.
Yes.
And you know, that's the kind of thing that Bobby, I think, learned about and would be in a position to fight for if he was elected president in a way that we're not seeing right now and didn't see under the most recent leadership we've had.
Let me remind our audience here, we're interviewing Dick Russell, the author of the book called The Real RFK Jr., Trials of a Truth Warrior. It's available now in audio formats as well as Kindle and physical formats. It's available everywhere. Dick, let me ask you, knowing what you know about Bobby, if he were to be elected president, do you believe that he would stick to the integrity of his convictions of what he has promised to do, or would he fold under pressure and threats from others?
I don't think so. No, I what I see happening is that he will stand steadfast with what he believes in and will fight for that in terms of what appointments he would make to cabinet positions or ambassadorships or especially federal agencies. You know, he would get rid of the people at the CDC and the FDA and the NIH and the EPA, you know, who are just in bed with these corporate, you know, thugs, basically, you know, the guys who are just running roughshod over us and poisoning our atmosphere and in some cases our kids.
Yeah. And don't forget the USDA in there too.
Yeah. You know, he's a big supporter of regenerative agriculture.
Absolutely.
And of alternative forms of energy. And that's, you know, and then getting rid of the subsidies for oil and gas. I mean, you know, these things are obvious, and yet they haven't been done in any kind of scale that we need to see happen to avert, again, you know, potential future catastrophe. So he doesn't want nuclear power either. You know, I mean, you know, nuclear is, we saw what happened at Fukushima in Japan with the terrible radiation spills into the ocean. And we also see what's happened to the ocean itself, you know, from warming waters and the algae and, you know, the choking off the life of our seas, which we're so vitally dependent upon.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I'm sure you're well aware of this, but, you know, there's a design of a nuclear power plant that has no such risks as that GE constructed plant in Fukushima. The problem is that in a more passively cooled nuclear power plant, they don't have the side benefit of being able to produce byproducts used for nuclear weapons, right? So there is a way to have nuclear energy that could be a whole lot safer, but nobody wants to do it that way because they need the weapons, which brings us back to the war issue, right? War is such a racket, isn't it? It's so profitable for these companies that just, all this money that Biden announces or Blinken announces, we're sending this money to Ukraine. Actually, it's going, most of it's going to the U.S. weapons companies. Into their pockets.
Exactly. Going to Lockheed Martin and
yes.
Marietta.
Raytheon, you know, or whoever, yeah.
Raytheon to become richer by selling the weapons to keep this war going.
Yep.
And you know, it's and again, it's not that Putin's a good guy or Putin is right, but he is. I think one thing that Bobby has, and others too, but he's pointed out, is that we made a promise to the Russians back, I think, when Gorbachev was still in power, and the Berlin Wall fell and all that, and communism disappeared supposedly. But you know, we made a promise that we would not expand NATO along those borders of Russia, and instead, I think there's 14 new NATO countries, and Ukraine was going to perhaps be the next one, and you know, that seemed to be, I guess, the last straw for Putin. I mean, so there is that other factor that. You know, and Bobby's gone through a lot over that. I mean, with the conversations at his dinner table, and you know, his son, his oldest son, Connor, who was in law school, suddenly took off last year in the fall, and just told his dad. He said, "I'm going to disappear for a while. I don't want to tell you where I'm going. Just don't worry, I'll be okay." And then he vanished. And the only reason that Bobby knew, had any idea, he and his wife Cheryl Hines had any idea where Connor was they saw this credit card bill from somewhere in Eastern Europe.
Oh, yeah.
And he ended up going to Ukraine on his own because he disagreed with his father at the dinner table. He felt like, you know, if you're going to, that the plight of that people is so severe that I'm going to join them. And he went there and he fought with the Ukrainian army or with the foreign, one of the foreign legion outfits, you know, for 3 months. I talked to him about it. He faced death. He didn't know. There were times he didn't know if he'd ever come back.
Wow. And,
Yeah,
that's a kind of a living hell experience. I'm sure that shaped Connor's understanding of events. But critically, if RFK Jr. becomes president, and I know he believes this, he would need to reestablish a communication style with Russia where America could once again be believed to tell the truth. Because with the Biden administration, they just lie constantly geopolitically. So Russia is, what Russia has learned is that they can never trust what's coming out of the State Department, Blinken or Victoria Nuland or Biden or whoever. They can't trust it. And if you don't have some level of trust, then how do you have a basis for communication? How do you have a basis for de-escalation? I think Bobby would help reestablish trusted communications. Again, we're not endorsing Putin or North Korea or Iran or whoever he needs to talk to, but he needs to be able to talk to them and talk us off the ledge of global annihilation.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think that's the way he honestly feels, that he's going to do everything he can through appointments and personal interchanges, like his uncle had had with Khrushchev. And if it takes a back channel, I mean, he tells the story of how they, there was a guy with the KGB back in those days, I think it was Bolshakov was his name, who became friends with his father and even came over there to Hickory Hill. And they knew that this guy, you know, the kids knew the guy was with the KGB. That was kind of a big deal, right? But it was he who helped establish this channel of communication with Khrushchev that took us much closer to global peace than we'd known before. Khrushchev, interestingly, you know, didn't make it either past. He was deposed in the autumn of 64 by the hardliners within his country. So you had sort of a parallel event. It had already happened to
right.
to JFK. And of course, when the letters indicate that when Kennedy was killed, that Khrushchev was just, you know, he was in tears. I mean, it really hurt him so badly that this man who befriended him in a correspondence had been taken off the earth.
Yes. These world leaders, if we dare call them leaders, more like crooks in many ways, they're playing with the lives, they're toying with the lives of billions of innocent human beings. And as we're about to wrap up this interview, Dick, I just want to reiterate that I believe that RFK Jr. wants to give power back to individual people to decide their own lives, to keep the product of their own labor, to make their own medical and health decisions, to live in peace without the threat of war, to live in freedom without the threat of surveillance or privacy violations or censorship. Would you agree with that statement?
I would not only agree with it, I'm moved by the way you put it. I think you nailed it all. And, you know, I've had a number of talks with Bobby and watched him with people. And, you know, he's very open-minded. He listens. He studies. He's willing to change his mind. That, I think, was the great gift that his uncle and his father, you know, gave the world to, is that they were willing to change as human beings while they were in office. JFK started out as a real cold warrior. His brother Bobby, after he was killed, you know, spent months in relative seclusion, you know, reading Camus and the existentialists and the great Greek poets, and suffering. Out of that suffering was born a truly compassionate man who, when Martin Luther King was killed, you know, could address a crowd, a mostly black crowd in Indianapolis, and move them so that they would not and did not riot like was happening in cities all across America, understandably, after Martin Luther King was killed. So, you know, I think that's I don't know that it's an inheritance, certainly, in a sense, you know, that he has always valued. He wrote a whole book called American Values about what he took from his family, his experiences like that. And I think he's raised six kids and raised them very well. And I know them, and they're all very different and all devoting themselves to one kind of public service or another. And I think that, you know, he's the man that we need at this point in our history.
Well, Dick Russell, I thank you so much for you undertaking this book project, putting so many hours into this and helping share your understanding of this extraordinary man with all of us. And I believe that if RFK Jr. were to become president, it would be a great gift to this nation and our world, frankly. So let's see how history unfolds here. And I thank you for taking the time with me today, Dick. It's been a pleasure. And I'm serious. I'd love to invite you back to talk about JFK on another episode here, if you're open to that.
Yeah, I'd be glad to do that, Mike. And I really enjoyed talking with you today. Thanks for having me.
You too. You too. Absolutely. All right. Take care then, Dick. And we'll talk again. I'll ask my producers to reach out to you to schedule. Folks, the book is called The Real RFK Jr., Trials of a Truth Warrior. There's the audiobook, and then there's the Kindle version here. It's on Amazon and I would imagine Barnes & Noble and other booksellers. And of course, if you'd like to support RFK Jr. in his candidacy, then go to Kennedy24.com. If you want to make a financial donation to his campaign, please do so before July 1st, because that's when it counts the most in terms of the election commission. And even, I think, setting up for any possibility of debates on the Democrat side. And we want debates. We want Joe Biden and RFK Jr. to have not only a debate, but maybe a push-up contest as well on top of that. So maybe both. How about that? Back to back. But thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. God bless you all. God bless America. Thanks for watching. Today's interview is brought to you by HealthRangerStore.com, where we have, of course, lab-tested almost all certified organic products for health, nutrition, for personal care, for home care. If you take a look at healthrangerstore.com, you can see here we've got turmeric gold plus, detox foot pads, colloidal silver nasal spray, organic elderberry and echinacea extract. This is the one that was formulated by Dr. Ed Group. It's really amazing. We have non-fluoride toothpaste alternatives. This is an amazing toothpaste product that I helped formulate. Aloe vera extract powder, so much more, really hundreds of products, freeze-dried organic blueberry powder. This is very high in anthocyanins. Just amazing. If you check out the full product line, you'll be blown away by what we have available right now at healthrangerstore.com. And every purchase helps support this platform and our desire to bring you the truth, to bring you fascinating guests, information that can help you prepare for the madness of the world that seems to have consumed our planet at the moment. My goodness, you're going to need health and nutrition to make it through everything that's coming, because where we are right now is only the beginning. So we appreciate your support. HealthRangerStore.com. Take care.